Hello again and welcome to Tinfoil Helmets, your occasional spicy hot take roundup of the latest F1 rumors with almost believable conspiracy theories to back them up. Everything here is carefully researched for hours to make sure it's totally founded in logic, reasoning, and truth. Or not. Who knows? And Dominic, I think we got to start right away. It was a great week for the technical aspect of the sport. The UCI came out with a list of 400 elements of new equipment and kit that's going to come out at the Glasgow World Championships next week or the week after that. I forget exactly the timeline. But I think it's great. We get a New Hope Lotus bike on the GB team. Looks like Look's bringing some updates for the French team. You know, the Japanese have a new Bridgestone bike that looks very similar to the old Hope Lotus bike. And the Hope Lotus bike is still fantastically ugly.
So basically what you're saying is everybody's inside the budget cap, but some people might not be, and some people have copied other teams to try and get a jump on it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, great. It's just like F1 then.
So the way the rules work is like cycling tech has to be available to consumers. So to like prove it's in the pipeline and stuff, you have to have everything that debuts at either a World Cup or a World Championship prior to the Olympics. And this is the last race in the cycle. So we'll see all the new kit come out in the next couple of weeks that'll be used in Paris in 2024.
So it's like rallying where everything's going to be homologated?
No, because you can do like fancy stuff like that's one-offs, but you have to like declare that this is ours and like that we've done it and we have a manufacturing process. Because for years, probably in a pure intersection of track cycling and Formula One, was the UK was riding what is effectively known as the USKI bike, the UK Sports Institute, and they were laying up what probably had to be Formula One levels of carbon fiber onto a bike that is still being used today.
Interesting. Interesting. But that's what Rally used to have. You have to have a car in Rally. You have to be able to buy it.
Yeah. You need the 500 models of whatever.
Yes, exactly. But that serves the basis that's appropriate for the one you actually race with.
And if we're Lancier, we'll take 250 over here. We'll go out for a nice lunch, and then we'll take you to the other parking lot where the other 250 are.
So, in that brief sojourn into the world of cycling, which sadly I'm now watching the Tour de France Unchained, it's pretty good. Everybody should watch that. But I'm trying not to get into cycling because I don't need more of that in my life.
Yes, health and exercise. How dare you?
I don't mean health and exercise. What do I sound like? Should we see if we've got anything right with these healthy athletes that go around in circles for 2 hours every weekend?
Absolutely.
So the first one we had here was Max Home Grand Prix doubleheader. I don't think you meant at the time he would win both the sprint race and the Grand Prix, because we'd forgotten it was a sprint. I'm not sure that's what you really meant, because it's still his home Grand Prix.
But he definitely won the first race of the home Grand Prix doubleheader.
He won both of the two Grand Prix of the first part of the quadruple header. Is Zandvoort also a sprint race?
I don't believe so.
Okay, great. Thank God for that. Can't cope with another one.
I think our next one is Qatar.
Oh, that's a long way away. Maybe not that long away, but it's a way away. So the other one is, have we got anything right? Perez's last race in the main bull red seat.
We'll see, but I don't think that's going to happen.
He excelled himself today in his performance?
No, I think there's more stuff going on. We can talk about it in our wonderful segment of Does Blank Still Have a Job?
Okay, good plan. I like that. Okay, more details to come. Breaking news. Maybe not breaking. Maybe that's his problem. He wasn't breaking enough. Or breaking too much. Anyway, between race drama. The first one. It's being moved live in our document. Okay, no contract for Lewis. This was me. I'm making up drama. If we all remember cast our minds back to a month or two ago, where Lewis was like, yeah, I'm ready to sign the contract, and Toto's like, yeah, I'm ready to sign the contract. There has been no contract signed, and there were suspicious questions from the obnoxious Scottish guy from Sky News, who was like, have you fallen out of love with F1? What did you lose? And Lewis' response was, that's a very personal question, and I'm not going to answer it. I think Lewis has no contract, and I think there's something more going on there that's a bit suspicious.
I think that falling out of love is a very harsh statement for Lewis right now. We know Shakira probably broke his heart. We don't want to necessarily mix those metaphors. And I think this is actually a galaxy brain move by Lewis here. He knows that historically when drivers sign new contracts, new big deals, their next race is garbage. So, you know, if we do it at the first week of the summer break, we get all this time before Zandvoort, all the garbage racing voodoo is gone, and thus he can race well at Zandvoort.
I will subscribe to that theory. In all honesty, I could absolutely believe that because he does seem to be a bit more chipper recently. I can buy that.
In the world of tire news, Pirelli is confirmed, I believe, through 2027 to be the tire supplier for Formula One, despite information coming out that Bridgestone put out more money for the job than Pirelli did.
I thought they had come out and said it had not been formally decided yet, and whoever had that information was telling porcupines. But maybe I misremembered that. I feel it's pretty much a foregone conclusion. I agree with it, but at the same time. And I do a follow-up question. You say they offered more money. Is that to say that Bridgestone offered it for less money, meaning it will cost F1 and the teams less money for the tyres, and therefore it costs Bridgestone more money? Or is there some kind of weird funny money going on?
I'm not entirely sure, but the headlines I read seem to indicate that F1 left money on the table by...
Interesting.
By not going with Pirelli. Well, because there has to be some monetary compensation, because like Pirelli is branded everywhere all over the circuits and stuff. So I imagine Liberty might get some kickback of like, we are an F1 sponsor. And then it depends how much they pay the charge of the teams and stuff.
Yeah, I assume it nets out, like you get the disc. Like, the question is whether somebody from Liberty Media writes a check for the tires and then Pirelli writes a smaller check back for the sponsorship, or whether it's all just nets out and somebody exchanges a token $1 or whatever it ends up being in reality.
That's a CEO level salary right there.
Exactly, because you get all the other shit on the side. I think the other aspect here is I wonder if actually F1 has probably done a backroom deal, and maybe Bridgestone's coming in for 2026. Like, we're changing the car, we're making it smaller, shorter, narrower, lighter, new engine, with all kinds of stuff that everybody's upset about, and that would be an appropriate time to come in and change up the tires.
I think it would be really interesting to have some sort of tire war again. I think we need something to help delineate the cars.
I agree. Absolutely agree. Okay, next item. Charles wants to stay at Ferrari forever.
Yeah, there was something that came... I think it was in one of the... It's not really between the races, but it was definitely inside the one of the pens, I think after his qualifying or something, but he was asked about his future with Ferrari. And... I have always been a person with my heart more than reason. I love Ferrari. The goal of Ferrari is to be a world champion and bring Ferrari back to the top. Oh, Charles.
This is ridiculous. I understand there is an aspiration. Like, to win a championship in a Ferrari is probably the greatest championship any driver could ever hope to win.
I mean, especially these days, it's a tractor.
Exactly. And on top of that, like, the achievement, like, it's not just that you've won a world championship, you won a world championship in a Ferrari against everything. The headwinds, the team, the country was all against you, and yet you prevailed. It makes you the greatest driver of all time. But yet he seems to be completely delusional.
I mean, the last person to win a world championship in a Ferrari was a hobbyist driver.
Indeed, which just makes it shows how he is, in fact, better than all of the other greats. And just for the people who don't know, we're talking about Kimi Raikkonen.
I wonder how much of this is... Charles is bought into the new Ferrari boss. Maybe we will see some changes during the off season. Maybe Javi will no longer have a job, and maybe they'll let Ferrari maybe they'll let them actually make the team good.
The only way that happens is a 3 to 5 year journey, right? I think Ferrari, to be brutally honest, they might be able to produce a car, but they will not be able to convert that a good car into successfully winning without fixing the rest of the team. And that is a 3 to 5 year journey, and I do not understand how any Ferrari team principal can survive that. Therefore, I feel it's unattainable for someone to spend 3 years faffing around not being able to do it. It feels like that's what should be possible, and that's what Schumacher and Ross Brawn and John Todt were able to do, was to get that 5 year window where they were able to convert after 3 to start being successful. I don't understand how that happens, and I'm to be brutally honest, I'm not sure that Charles is the person either to do that in general, or B, his ability to just constantly outdrive the car and put it in a wall.
You know, the interesting thing in all this is, like, if you look back at the history of Ferrari, like, we look back over, like, the last, since Ross Brawn and Schumacher left Ferrari, almost 20 years, and there's a lot of mediocrity there, and in some sense it seems like people are being kept in jobs they should not have. And you think back in further Ferrari history, and there is no way old man Enzo would have ever allowed for any of that.
They are not living the true Ferrari ethos.
Yeah. The true Ferrari ethos needs to be, this car will be a winner or I'll break your kneecaps.
You know, it's actually really interesting to think about that and the realities of Ferrari. I think you've hit upon a really interesting point. Ferrari has this reputation for being quick to judge and quick to fire, except that this doesn't apply to the people that really matter. It only applies to the figureheads. And it only really applies to the drivers. They don't change the rest of the team. And I'm sure there are lots of really, really good people at Ferrari. But there are clearly people there who have the culture wrong. And it's the culture. It's not the people in themselves. It's not their intrinsic abstract skill sets. It's the fact that culture just screws with so much. Like, see it all the time in various different jobs I've had. Culture, you know, culture eats strategy for breakfast. And that is really the problem for Ferrari. That's the test of Mercedes. That's the real test. Can Mercedes leverage what everybody, what they say is their culture, to turn it into success? And we'll find out in the next 3 years.
Yeah, I think that's something that like Red Bull definitely had to endure during the last period of Mercedes dominance. I think they did a really good job with it because they kept their heads up. They kept grinding. They made some bold moves when it came to like moving to the Honda engine, and they got it done.
Exactly. Co-signed, as much as I'm not a Red Bull fan. Co-signed. Okay, should we talk about the next item, or should we go to the next section and talk about that in the next section?
Well, it's a fantastic segue, so we should just do both.
Okay, we're going to go into the occasional segment of Does Blank Still Have a Job? Opening with the between-race drama of they fired the whole Alpine team. I exaggerate, but they basically fired the whole Alpine team.
Yeah, I saw the meme going around of Gasly and Ocon are going to be doing their own wheel changes at the pit stops.
I would not shock me if that actually came to be. It would, like, I'd be surprised, but I wouldn't be shocked.
Hey, that's very beneficial for the cost cap.
It is. It saves a lot of money because those pit crew cost money. But you still got to pay them to drive around the truck, so who knows. The thing that I think that's really curious about this is putting aside the fact that Otmar did a great interview, actually, in the F1 Off the Grid podcast this week. It was actually really interesting. It was an hour of him talking about his experiences and the challenges of Alpine. From someone who didn't think was particularly good at their job, he actually spoke very eloquently and was very clear-minded about what needed to happen. I'm convinced that at least 40% of the reason they fired everybody is that they weren't French, and that Renault and Alpine want to have a French team succeed with French management. They've got two drivers, they've got a French engine, and now they just need a French leadership team, and it will achieve the greatest success in Formula One that they've ever hoped for.
Well, Dominic, you're watching Tour de France Unchained. How do you think pure French leadership is going to go in the Formula One grid? Anything like the Tour de France grid?
It's going to be amazing for the rest of us, because we'll have something to talk about. Did you see Alain Prost was extremely critical of Laurent Rossi this week as well, throwing him under the bus, saying that he doesn't know how to run a team, which I thought was brilliant.
Wait, isn't that the same person who threw Otmar under the bus for not being able to run a team?
I think so.
Yeah, okay.
I would like to see Alain Prost come back. You know, I would love to see Alain Prost come out of retirement to be an actual team principal at Renault/Alpine. I think that would be great.
Oh, that would definitely give us some drama.
I think that would be brilliant. I think he has value to add, and it would be interesting and exciting.
Let's not forget the time he purposely ran the car underweight when he was running a team to try to attract a sponsor.
He did?
Yeah.
Everybody says he's such a nice person, but apparently he's a bit of a cheater.
So you remember like there was like Prost GP in like the 90s, right?
Yes.
There was one year where they knew the car was absolute shit. They went to testing, and because it's testing and nobody cares, they deliberately ran the car massively underweight so it looked like a damn rocket ship so they could try to get some sponsorship in.
That is extremely sneaky. Referring back to the F1 Off the Grid podcast again, Alain Prost did a really interesting, I think, two interviews maybe in the last 2 years with that podcast. Definitely worth a listen, because he talks about his time running at Prost GP and how basically all the sponsors screwed him and Eddie Jordan screwed him and somebody else screwed him. And then he also talks about the experiences that he had with Ayrton Senna and how they hated each other until about 6 months before Ayrton Senna had a whoopsie.
Yeah. I do think it'd be interesting to see Prost back. That would be interesting. I'm not sure as a team principal, though. Maybe as like the Niki Lauda Mercedes role.
Maybe, because he was trying to play that role, but they didn't want him. And apparently he had a falling out with Laurent Rossi last year, and that's why he left. Apparently the rumor name I heard was Binotto to come in for Alpine.
Oh, yeah, I could see that. He's not French, though.
He's not French, but maybe they'll give an exception because it's close enough to France. It shares a border with France, so it's okay.
Oh, the ex-Ferrari, that might be the AlphaTauri spot.
Oh, well, we can talk about that at the end. That's your crazy.
Oh, never mind.
I'll come back to that later. Do we have any more to add on the Alpine/Otmar situation?
No, I don't think so. I was just wondering if there's anything else from between the races that happened. I don't think so.
Okay. Lance, does Lance still have a job? I didn't think it was a great drive.
No.
It was not a great drive.
I mean, how many different ways can we say no? Let's see. He was in the sprint. He was 11th in the race. He was 9th. He got 2 points.
He got in the points. Good job after sliding back.
Yeah. There was a graphic of like the leader on the team versus like what percentage of the constructor championship points do they have. And Fernando Alonso, like far and away, has all of Aston's points.
It's just so terrible. It's so terrible. Which leads us to the interesting rumor that was doing the rounds, which was that Pironi will no longer be sponsoring Aston Martin, and will in fact be sponsoring Ferrari, who is also currently sponsored by a beer company, who will no longer be sponsored by a beer company. And that beer company went to sponsor Ferrari, a name I've forgotten, because they are Sainz's, buddy sponsor. Which leads to an interesting question. Who are they going to sponsor? Is it going to be Aston Martin? And where is Carlos Sainz going? Are they going for an all-Spanish team?
This could lead to one of the theories that we floated a little bit ago, was Stroll to Ferrari, Sainz to Aston Martin.
Exactly. This is clearly evidence that this is going to happen.
And Charles was in the news this week talking about how much he loves Carlos as his teammate. So that might be also some messaging to management of, no, don't let Carlos go to Aston Martin. Don't pair me with Lance.
Because he doesn't want to be crushed by Lance?
Actually, honestly, if Charles wants to win a world championship with Ferrari, he needs Lance as his second driver.
Because he won't try and compete with him? Or can't compete with him?
Yes, because looking back to last year's F1 season, Charles was in a rocket ship of a Ferrari, and Carlos could not drive that car. They equalized the car to help Carlos be more on pace with Charles, and it nuked Charles's pace. So if you put somebody like Lance in where there's no hope of ever getting him on pace, then we can develop the car for Charles. Charles has a rocket ship. That's how he wins.
Insert, what was it, Always Sunny in Philadelphia gif of guy wrapping all the connections between to make it just so. I think that one's plausible, but also a bit tenuous.
Oh, I thought we would do like the title card of Lance wins the world championship.
That should be an excellent presentation that we will do at the very end of this season, after we know where things are happening and we can provide a concrete plan forward. It could be our first video episode. We'll put it on YouTube.
Whoa.
Next on the list is Ferrari. Do we want to talk about Ferrari, or we've kind of Ferrari'd to death already?
I mean, yeah. How much more can you say?
They didn't have a terrible race.
Charles didn't have a terrible race.
No, but it wasn't. Ferrari, the team, did not screw up.
Yeah, they could have called Charles in for inters. I guess.
That would not have been a completely unexpected solution for Ferrari. Okay.
They didn't totally botch it. They still went from first to third, though.
Yeah, I mean, I will give Leclerc the fact that the reality was he's not going to beat the Red Bulls. Anyway, next, Logan Sargeant. I don't think we've got anything to say about him. He drove around at the back. I'm still not sure whether he should be in F1 or not. It's getting pretty close, though.
Perez, I think he's safe through 2023. It came out, Helmut Marko was asked pretty much the direct question of, can you swap him to the AlphaTauri? And apparently he has a line in his contract that says he cannot get swapped to the AlphaTauri, which, great job, contract writers of Formula One. You know who the Red Bull team are, and you put that in the contract. Great job. Fantastic.
Excellent.
And I think that means, like, we won't see Ricardo swapped in or swapped into the Red Bull seat, or Yuki for that matter, because Yuki's also driving very well. Just because, like, at that point, who do you put back in the AlphaTauri? You can't put Nick DeBries back in. Like,
no, God, no.
No, you can't do that. You can't, like, you're going to grab Liam from Super Formula for, like, five races. So,
and apparently he's doing well in Super Formula, like he's on target to be successful.
Yeah, so like I think the more realistic solution is, like, you know, somebody, if Perez gets punted out of the Red Bull seat, it happens after 2023, you move maybe either Yuki or Daniel up, probably Daniel, and then you move Liam into partner with Luke, with Yuki.
So are we making a suggestion? I think I support that we take Perez off the list.
I think so.
Okay, we will take him off the list. That is, we've got two people got fired, Otmar and Nick DeBries, off the list, and now we're taking Perez off the list. Oh, we had one other. Zach Brown is also off the list. Although maybe after this week's performance, I'm not so sure. Maybe he needs to come back. But
I have thoughts on McLaren. I think McLaren had a fine weekend.
I think they did. I think they were just unlucky. They also had a massive rear wing, and I don't know why they picked it.
I have theories.
We'll talk about that in the race, shall we? Last on the occasional segment, does still have a job? It's going to be really quick. Yuki, yes, Ricardo was made to look bad by Yuki.
Yeah, I have some thoughts on that in the race. I don't think that's totally Ricardo's fault, but I think Yuki is always much better than people give him credit for, despite being his dream wanted to be a restaurateur and not a Formula One champion.
Well, it's like Lewis. He wants to be a musician/rock star, but he's great in Formula One.
Yeah, but he also wants that eighth championship really bad.
True.
However, I think that's what helps make Yuki a really great driver, because he's not overwhelmed by the burden of a championship. You saw what happened to Perez. Yuki is the next generation. Yuki is the Japanese Kimi.
I can believe that.
Adored by all. Great quotes. Swearing. Goes out there. It's a hobby to him. Yuki is our new Kimi.
Yuki Raikkonen.
Yes.
Great. Okay, quali recap?
I mean, it was interesting.
Only because it was a drying track again, which is, what, the third race in a row now that we've had this? Because I think it was at Silverstone, and then it happened at Hungary, and now it's happened here. It's fun, but I...
It happened here twice, if you include the sprint race.
True. That is very true. Yeah, it was a bit of a non-event. The only thing I took away from it is Lewis had a conversation with his engineer about his mirrors. And Lewis says, "Can someone come fix my mirrors?" At which point, an engineer runs diligently down the pit lane and hands him some new gloves. And then leaves and doesn't fix his mirrors.
See, Dominic, what you're missing here is this is clearly code between Lewis and Bono. Throughout their whole life, they've just been speaking in code on the radio. And "fix my mirrors" really just means I need a new pair of gloves.
But it makes sense to have code. I understand why you have code to throw the team off. But mirrors for gloves? Like, is that like on page 94 of the Secret Decoder Manual? It's very strange. But that was probably the interesting, not exciting, but interesting part of qualifying.
Max was quite livid at the end of Q2 because he barely made it through. Yeah, I don't entirely know what happened there. I just got some of the radio messages, or I saw some of the radio messages between GP and Max of like, "Well, you're the one that wanted to charge the battery," or something like that.
Yeah, Max was really covering for the fact he went off. He had basically a really tight moment at the corner with no name and nearly went off into the wall. And that's really what screwed that last lap that he was trying for. And so I think it was his own fault. He can blame the team as much as he wants, but it was his own fault. Shouldn't have screwed up.
But then he put it on pole by 8/10, so, you know.
Well, exactly. He had it, he just screwed up that one time.
I very much enjoyed the Max versus GP radio messages this week. I fully believe they are on the same team and absolutely trust each other, but man, there were some good radio messages this week.
It was definitely a bit feisty.
Yeah, let's talk about the sprint. It got shortened, didn't it? Only 11 laps?
It did, because of the rain, and they were driving around in a circle for... behind the safety car for four laps or three laps, I think it was.
Yeah, five more laps would have made that race epic, because it had pretty much reached the crossover point like a lap and a half to go, two laps to go.
Yeah.
And yeah. So five more laps, that would have been one epic race.
They always say that they can't extend the races because of the fuel load, which I understand. It makes sense. But if there was ever an argument to allow refueling again, it would be that. I feel like there's an excuse to make this happen.
If you're doing a sprint race, you only need you don't need the whole full 100 kilograms. So you could add five laps if you really wanted to. But that's a little bit, in my opinion, of like putting your finger on the scale of like, oh no, it's another lap. Like,
well, what they should do, there's two things they could do. They could do the slightly weird thing that the lower formulas do, which is that it's a timed thing. And they time it, and then when you do it, get to the very end and the clock runs out, you get one more lap. They could try solving it a little bit that way. The other thing that they could try doing is they could just legally require people to be fueled an extra 15% for an extra five laps or something, and that's what it is. And then and you would only enforce that rule in the case of a wet race. I don't know. It just seems maybe it's worth it. But yes.
Time plus three laps could be interesting.
Indeed. I agree with that. Perez and Lewis coming together?
They did. Lewis got a super harsh penalty for what I think was a bit of a wet track racing incident, because he also got two penalty points on his license.
Oh, he did too. It was a proper one, was it? That sucks. I thought this was interesting in for two ways. One, I do agree it was a racing incident, especially as you look at it and it's like, whoops, it's gone sideways. The second part that I think that is kind of weird and interesting is I almost wonder if Red Bull intentionally forced Perez to retire to make it look bad so that Lewis would get hurt, because they don't like Lewis.
Yeah, I think it's also one of those, the points only go eight deep, and once you're out of the points, like, what's, and you're clearly going backwards, why bother, keep going, save the engine. You know, not to jump too far to like the race, but Crofty and Brundle were talking about that with Carlos Sainz as well, of like, you are clearly going backwards, you're not going to finish in the points, save the engine.
And it was interesting because Perez was already going backwards. He was already in trouble before Lewis got on him. And so I think there's also something else going on there.
If it hadn't been a safety car started, if it had been a grid start, we would have probably got a repeat of the Hungary situation last year with Lewis being the sole driver on the grid.
Yeah, I think so. I'd agree with that. It was definitely close.
There were a lot of people that dove in as soon as the safety car was done. And yeah, Max did one lap on the wets and then came in, and then he was, what, 3 seconds behind Oscar?
Alonso bends it.
He did. He doesn't usually bend it, and he bent it.
It was very rare, and I think you can use that to make an excuse for some of the other drivers who maybe had some whoopsies. That, you know, if Alonso bends it, and he was, he looked like a really unlucky binning it too. He was not pushing, he was just being tentative. But sucks for him, especially on his birthday weekend.
First time all year he hasn't scored points in a point scoring ability.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Well, it shows how a good season it's gone for him in generally, other than the car going backwards. Which, sidebar, Aston Martin admitted that they've screwed up the car. They said they don't quite understand why, but it has definitely gone backwards due to an upgrade.
Do you think... So, I assume you are familiar with custom Slack emojis and stuff and GIFs. Do you think if there is a Aston Martin Formula One team Slack... that they have a Lawrence Stroll, I'm very angry for GIF or custom me or custom emoji already set up for something like this?
I hope they do. And I hope they've got Alonso ones where Alonso's like, you know, looking smug because that's what he does. And then I hope they've got a crying Lance one for whenever Lance screws up.
They also need the for Alonso on the camping chair at Brazil.
Yes, exactly. Which was very similar to this. You'd use that in this situation today. You'd react with Lawrence, and then you'd react with camping chair. Race recap?
Yeah, let's get to it. I thought it was... The first half, I thought, was pretty interesting. And then the rain stopped.
There was no rain in the race today. Oh, no, wait, there was a little bit. That wasn't rain. There was no rain. No rain happened today.
People put on ponchos. There were team principals holding their hands out in the pit lane.
Doesn't mean it rained. There was rain on the camera, but there wasn't rain in that race. I don't think it did anything to the race.
Max went slightly sideways, and that's going to drop his driver ranking from like a 9.5 to a 9.0, because he clearly can't control the car going up Radeon.
Oh, more than that. Down to a 2, because can't keep it in a straight line. My summary really was, well, there was a race, and it was all right, and it went around for 2 hours. I will say, I enjoy Spa every time. It's always a good race. Even when it's a boring race, it's still a good race. It's a fun track. It's got all the fun bits. If only they could...
It's a beautiful track.
It is beautiful. And I just wish they had slightly less death corner on it. And I think they can fix that without losing the spirit of the corner.
I agree. Or just put a ramp and make it a proper jump and really just, like, you know, Hot Wheels this thing.
Exactly. And then that would enable people to have to push their suspension to even greater heights, literally. So one thing I noticed while watching the race, there was a point where Perez was in front and leading and Max was trying to catch him. And he was getting real close. And then there was this radio message just immediately before Perez pits that was Max asking, says, so are we going to do it? And then GP was just like, use your head, use your head. And I want to know what the are we going to do it was. I would also like to point out, as a very important fact, whenever Perez is this far in front of Max and he pits, his pit stop always gets screwed up.
Yeah, there were sparks flying off. I was hopeful that they... I was very happy the second time they did press a second stop, they were actually able to get the tire off, and it didn't in turn... they didn't try to go for Valtteri Bottas's pit stop record.
4 weeks, 3 months, and 6 days. exactly.
48 hours, be kind.
Okay, I'm sorry. Over-exaggerated.
Yeah. That was interesting. I'd assume that was something about like tire strategy. You wanted to make sure they were on equal footing, something like that. However, there was a great onboard with Max, like right after the pit stop cycle, where he was within 0.3 of Perez for pretty much the entire lap. And it was amazing to watch because Max was like just nailing every apex, driving the car like through the corners amazingly well. And Perez was just like all over the place, comparatively.
Almost all the drivers were all over the place. If you were watching all weekend, anywhere there was a moment of possible slippiness, Max was, apart from the wobble he had into the corner of No Name and on Eau Rouge in the race, was very solid almost the entire time. And everybody else was a bit, not fighty, but definitely not quite as stable. And I think that's the thing that's setting him apart, both from the rest of the field, but more importantly from Perez.
But like you watch some of the other splits and you'd see like, oh, they're going down the Kemmel straight and like they close up a little bit because of the slipstreams. And then, you know, when you go through like Puan and No Name, you see things start to spread out a little bit. But with like that lap followed with Max following Perez, he was just 3/10 the entire lap. It was impressive.
Do you think Max is partially being so close and staying intentionally that tight just to show Perez about the fact that it's Max's team and how dare you be just a jackass about everything?
I don't think Max is that vindictive. I think it's definitely a I'm better than you. Because like it took Max a little bit more time than I would have thought to clear Hamilton and Charles. And Perez could not open up a gap in that time.
So I was thinking about that at the time as Max was trying to go past Lewis. And I think there's two things that played into it. One, Max is finally driving like a champion, which is to say, I don't actually need to get past and make a point. I'm just going to take my time, get real close and make this work. Two, the previous day, Lewis had gone bang into his teammate and taken him out. And so maybe Max was trying to be a bit more cautious.
Oh, yeah, I definitely think it was, I have 44 laps to do this. I don't need to rush through it. But I think it was very like, you know, if Max is in front, you know, we've seen him open up gaps in the first 5-10 laps to really start to pull away. And, you know, maybe then he goes into like a tire management mode. And Perez had 3 seconds on Charles, and that was it. And that was pretty much his gap to Charles the entire race, was between 3 and 6 seconds. Like, he was never able to like really open up the gap. And, you know, if you're trying to beat Max, and you've got cars between, you got bodies between you and Max, you better pull out a gap for every shot. Like you saw, like George had great pace towards the end of the race, but he had spent so much time in traffic. He was 30 seconds behind.
It made me think about the fact that, you know, we talk about drivers who overdrive a car. I think the reality is Max has been given an amazing car that he is then out driving that car. Like, he's going more than that car can do. But I think Perez is underdriving that car. He is not reaching the full capabilities of that car. I'm not expecting him to be up there with Max. Perez is, whether he believes he is or not, and anybody else who's a fan, which should be, is an idiot for saying this, he's not Max. But I feel like he should be better, or making more advantage is maybe the correct way of saying it, in that car. That car is clearly a comical rocket ship. It is ridiculous. But he's just not, he's not able to extract it. And I don't think it's a difficult car to drive. It doesn't look like a difficulty, what was the Mercedes term they used? It's not a diva, that car, right? It's a car, you get in it and drive it.
Hey, I'd put it into a wall, I'm sure.
I'm pretty sure I put it into the wall at the first corner before I got it out of the garage. I'd be doing a Max at Silverstone.
Yeah, then you'd be just as good as Max of running into the curb out of the pit lane. I was watching the race with a friend, and we were just laughing of like every lap there goes another like 2/10 out of Perez, like every single lap. And there was at one point in time where they were talking about some of the pace of the cars, and it's like everybody's in the 152s except for Max, who's in the 151s. He's on his own like level.
Yeah, let's not bench set against Max. It's not helpful. It's not productive. Next,
Ricardo.
Yep. What happened to his pace? He was great in the sprint. He seemed to be like you're like, this is the Ricardo we know and love, and then it was terrible today compared to Yuki, especially when you compare it to Yuki.
So early in the race, he was stuck in like the forever long DRS train that went from like Sainz all the way back. They tried to pit him and get him in some clear. And I really think the AlphaTauri is just terrible in traffic, because I think that's the one difference of Danny was always following somebody about like 0.7 to a second back in like the DRS zone. And that car just doesn't have enough pace to get around somebody in traffic. And Yuki was in pretty clear air most of the time.
But what about yesterday, where Ricardo was overtaking people and doing great? Was it just a byproduct of the fact that in yesterday's race, it was a drying track, which is the great equalizer?
I think it was a bit of a great equalizer, variable conditions, where Daniel could show his true pace. And kind of segueing into McLaren's weekend a little bit, there's a possibility of maybe they set up the car more for the rain than for the dry. Because if you are a backmarker team, gamble on the rain. And on the drying track, on the wet track, Ricardo had pace. And then if you're not slippery and you're draggy because of the rain, you don't have the straight line speed to come around the Haases. And I think this weekend was a very mixed up grid in the term of who was banking on the wet and who was banking on the dry. Red Bull, Ferrari, Aston Martin, they all set up their cars to hope for a dry Sunday. and they were going to take the pain everywhere else. And then McLaren clearly set up their car for the wet, because like Lando was floundering at the back of the field, like 17th, 18th, and then that light rain started to fall, and next thing you know, he's up to like 7th and holds it there.
But that's the key. That's the thing I don't quite understand, and I have to assume it has a big chunk to do with fuel load. Sure, he was languishing at the back, and then it rained, and he was able. The car was working better because it had more downforce because of the massive rear wing. But then he was able to stay in 7th, and he wasn't in trouble in 7th. He wasn't playing defensive, and he was able to maintain that relatively easily. The commentary said that he had a busted steering for a lot of the race, and then they finally fixed it. And maybe that's really what was causing him to be stuck at the back, not the giant wing of doom that I thought it was.
But it definitely helped. Like,
it moved him forward.
It all helped, yeah. Because that was where he made up a lot of places, was when he just went forward, when the rain started to come down. And he made up like 3 or 4 places real quick with the down wing, with the big wing.
Okay. Should talk about Merck next?
Oh, I guess.
Seems consistent. Car's doing the right thing. Do you think they've made a leap forward? Would you push back on me and say that the car has been fixed?
It's tough to say, because like Red Bull is clearly the class of the field. Aston have clearly screwed something up, and Ferrari are so like in the middle of everything that it's kind of hard to place.
The thing that I take away from it is I still think the car is crap. I don't think anybody would dispute that. But I think whatever has happened to Lewis since his breakup with Shakira, it has emotionally moved him to now be better than George. Like, that is the biggest shift I think you can make a judgment in trying to work out what's happened is Lewis is in front of George consistently, right? Like, for the previous year, there was no way that, like, Lewis would dig deep and get in front of him in qualifying, and in the race he always seemed to just languish. But something happened since they got those upgrades, and maybe it genuinely is that, you know, George spent the last 3 years driving around in a tractor, and he's just used to dealing with a crap car. Lewis is not used to dealing with a crap car. Now the car is balanced, at least. It might not have the performance, but now he can do it. I think there's something interesting going on there that I don't really quite understand. Sainz versus Piastri?
Yeah, the turn one collision. I don't think Sainz left Oscar enough space. I think he's lucky to escape without a penalty.
I think I agree, except Piastri really, he was trying too hard.
Yeah, but it's LaSource. That was my major concern for like Max in P6, who, by the way, gets a win from a new grid position. So Max's side quests are going very well.
He needs to do the side quest of every position on the grid in one season.
I mean, I think once he has it wrapped up, I think he should try for a pit lane start to win.
I agree.
Has anybody ever done that? Or just like start pulling out the record book of where has nobody ever won? And it's like, can I somehow qualify like P17 just to go like P17 to P1?
He needs to do that. It's worth it. But yeah, Pastry should not have been going down the inside. And yes, I too share said Pastry? Concern that Pastry did. Did I do that? I'm sorry.
Yes,
I'm sorry, Oscar. But Piastri going down the inside, he was hope. It was an hope and a prayer. But I'm glad Max didn't get whacked, because that would have just been annoying.
Yeah, no, I was watching Max on the start, and he went so far around the outside at LaSource. He's like, this is the one spot where I could have a problem. I'm just going to take it very wide. Oh, yay, they touched. I'm up to P4. Huzzah.
Smart boy. Last item, Red Bull breaks the trophy. Well, not last item. I've got one to pull up from the middle. But Red Bull breaks the trophy again. I didn't see the picture of the broken trophy, but I did see that they broke it again.
Yeah, they were doing the big team photo afterwards, and then they were like trying to run away from champagne or something like that. And whoever was holding up the pit board of like Max P1, Sergio P2, like the pit board knocked into the trophy, and the trophy fell over, and the trophy broke. So trophy broke again.
Max looked pretty shocked about it. He looked actually quite upset about it. It's like, oh crap, what have I done?
So well, it's his first of his home weekend doubleheader.
True, it is a truly important trophy for him being from his home.
I do feel bad about that Hungary trophy, though. That trophy was beautiful.
It was all right. It's a trophy.
I think it's better than some of like the random globs of metal we see.
I agree with that. I also feel like it was better than the Monaco trophy, which just seems like they just want to do weird stuff with the trophy, with a case and the whole stuff. I'm like, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I really like... the thing I really liked about the Hungary trophy was similar to how we've talked with when they go to Mexico and they do the mariachi band Formula One theme. I love the local cultural takes on like Formula One trophies, Formula One themes, and I would love to see more of that because I think it really makes it feel like a world championship.
Indeed, it makes it feel like you, the team... The the race has come to you and is partaking in your culture rather than you just being a happy stop along the way.
Exactly.
Okay. Last thing from the race, though. Towards the end, Max said, well, I could go drive harder and then pit. And I think this was because Max was bored.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and I think he wanted to play out this scenario because the supposition was he'd drive harder and then pit. My suggestion is actually what he was asking was, I want to pit right now. I will end up in P5 behind Hamilton. Yeah, no, P4 behind Hamilton, 5 seconds behind him, 10 seconds behind Leclerc, and then about 15 seconds behind Perez. And then he will scythe through the field and win by 5 seconds, having fun, right? And on top of that, there was no risk to him. There is zero risk, right? He might bend the car. Maybe the cost cap's a concern for Red Bull because they spent too much on catering again. But even if he had crashed, even if it had gone wrong, it was in no danger for any... There was no jeopardy involved in those situations. And I don't know why they didn't do it.
That was the between race drama I was missing. Was the... No, it's Helmut Marko. That's the cost cap problem.
I remember you texting me this. Yes.
We'll talk about that in takes and rumors. We'll put a quick pin in that. Because that's going to get interesting how that shakes out.
I think that's it for the race, I think.
Yeah, no, I just going to say, I think while they haven't clinched anything, they are going to still keep it relatively safe. But I think as soon as they clinch the drivers, I would love for them to try to have some fun with some of this.
Yes, they need to for the sake of Formula One.
That being said, however, I think it would be great if they just clean sweep the season and just like put that record on a shelf of, oh, yeah, you want to talk about like, oh, well, we won more race or more percentage than McLaren, or we didn't win as many as McLaren, but McLaren has a higher percentage, but there were only 16 races. Nah, man, go 23 of 23 or 24 of 24, however many races are in the season. 23, I think. Go 23 of 23, 100% win record, put that record on a shelf that can only be tied, never broken.
So the thing that's going to be interesting about that is when it happens, Ferrari will eventually, because they believe they will be the greatest team of all time, will push for more races despite the fact I don't think they're particularly jazzed about it, if only to be able to say that they got the new record.
Well, 2024 has 24 races. So there we go, Ferrari. Like, you could take it from Red Bull at that point in time. Yeah. I can't wait till 2052 and we have a race every weekend.
Yay. I'm not excited about that. Okay, spicy takes and rumors. I'm going to open with this one. This isn't really a spicy take slash rumor, but I feel like this is the best place to put it. We haven't heard about Max's cats in a while. He has cats and he likes them. They're some Bengals, but we haven't heard about them in a while. If you have any tips or rumors or information from when you've been hanging out in Monaco, dear listener, let us know what's going on with Max's cats, because I really want to know.
We heard some about them in Hungary.
Did we?
Yeah, during the Ricardo Max press conference or something, there apparently, or it was Silverstone maybe, where Checo and Ricardo were talking about Max's cats, and apparently one got lost but was found.
Interesting. If you have any more details on this, please send it into feedback@tinfoilhelmets.com.
If you have seen a cat of Max's.
Or any cat. I will take any cat picture.
So one thing we didn't talk about in between race drama that like I think we can definitely throw in takes and rumors is... it seems like Red Bull might have gone over the cost cap, but in a very interesting way, because Christian Horner has come out and said, like, they stopped developing the car. They stopped developing the car, so, like, they're way under on the 2022 budget. However, the FIA is very upset that Helmut Marko is not listed as one of, like, the top exempt salaries at Red Bull, and thus he is not exempt from, like, cost cap spending. And Red Bull's counter argument is he is not a Red Bull employee. So it's, or a Red Bull Racing employee, because I believe he is actually under contract from like the Red Bull Energy company.
Oh, I see. I was about to say, mate, he's getting paid $0 by Red Bull Racing.
So the kind of the argument is like he is managing all the drivers and thus he should be part of like Red Bull Racing. But then like at the same point in time, can he be split like across with AlphaTauri? Because I guess he's also managing them. But in reality, because he did say he had a contract with Red Bull. He did not specify if that was Red Bull Racing or Red Bull, the energy drink company. I think it's very likely his contract is with the Red Bull energy drink company of you are managing our motorsports drivers, because, you know, not only is that Formula One, there's Formula Two, Super Formula, Formula Three, Formula Four, the whole junior program. So it's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out, because there are other teams that are making the argument like, well, he's in the Red Bull garage every single weekend. You have a guest in your garage every single weekend, or at some point are you an employee? And I think that's going to get really interesting from like a contract law, rules lawyering situation.
So here's how this is going to go down. There is going to be a preliminary discussion about the fact that Red Bull has broken the cost cap by however much they pay Helmut Marko. And then there will be a backroom deal between Alpine, Williams, Haas, and there's another team. One other team who's talked about this, I can't remember who it is, because they all have capital expenditure problems and they want to raise the cap X on the budget cap from the 36 million to something else every however often. And they need five teams, and apparently there's the fifth team is being a pain in the ass. Here's what the deal's going to be. They're going to agree to have some conversation and adjudicate Marko as being okay for this season with if Red Bull will provide the fifth vote to increase the cap X budget cap.
Well, I think we've talked about on this podcast before. I think as part of wind tunnel time, CFD computations, I would put infrastructure projects on that same thing as well, as if you are the last team, you can spend more on an infrastructure project than a top team. Because a bigger wind tunnel or a better wind tunnel or a better supercomputer or something to help you do all the CFD programs, I think that's as critical as important. So I would be the fifth team vote, but I don't own a Formula One team.
Not yet. Still time.
I gotta join a better startup company with a more lucrative stock plan.
Indeed. What you need to do is find a startup that chooses to buy an F1 team, and then you can segue into working on the F1 team.
No, I want the startup to make money.
Okay, you don't want to be part of the F1. You're not going to just take it for living in the F1 life. You have to cancel the podcast at that point because you'd be part of a team and you can't really be on the podcast at that point.
That's fair. Yeah, see, I wouldn't do that to our dozen listeners.
Exactly. There was one more point I was going to make about cost cap something. Oh, that's it. Alpine came out this week and fully admitted that their engine is a dumpster fire. Specifically, the battery is not good and therefore they would like the FIA to enforce engine equalization. Which just strikes me as just in the same way they said, you can fix your reliability problems to improve performance, and then they find 25 million horsepower. It's about it. I understand why they want to do it, and I don't disagree with the sentiment, but I feel like there is no way that can be executed successfully.
Yeah, we talked about this before, that I think every season they should just have this is your target horsepower out of each component, and then the better you can do engineering those components to hit that horsepower, the better you can be. Because if you make a more optimal engine that can output 800 horsepower, great, you save fuel and start the race with less fuel. So there's still room in there to design and improve with still having some sort of engine equalization.
Right. Same power, different profile.
Right. Because if everybody's putting 800 horsepower out of the internal combustion unit, fantastic. But how are you doing that? Are you, say, burning oil to do that?
Indeed. Any more spicy takes and rumors, or should we move on to wrap up?
We got our summer break predictions.
Yes. Do we have summer break predictions? Oh wait, sorry. I see you say no. I can't read this. Let me try this again. So should we move on to our wrap up with our crazy but plausible summer predictions?
I think so. We're going to do a summer mid-season break episode. So we're just kind of predicting what we think might happen over the summer break, and we'll be back to talk about the Dutch GP in a little bit.
Okay, the first item we've got here is Otmar in AlphaTauri. And this can't happen because they've already signed the new team principal from Ferrari, who finally left Ferrari this week to start, I think, in November at AlphaTauri.
So it's not Binotto either?
It's not Binotto either. It's Mekies, I think, is the guy that's going for it, the sporting director.
Well, I'm interested to see. I assume we're going to get some Otmar news over the break, because he made some sort of comment of he's excited to implement his vision at this new team. This new job he can't talk about yet.
I just can't work out which team it would be, because you've got, it's not going to be Mercedes. It's not going to be Red Bull. It's not going to be Ferrari. It's not going to be AlphaTauri. It's not going to be Williams. It's not going to be Haas, because Gunther, which leaves you with Sauber and McLaren?
But McLaren has somebody lined up.
Not just lined up, they have. The other Andreas.
Maybe we're thinking about this all wrong. Maybe it's the Aston Martin hypercar program. And that's something along the lines of could it bleed back into the F1 team sort of thing.
Interesting, but he got unceremoniously fired from Aston Martin.
Yeah, so we'll give him a... Yeah, that's true. So Aston's probably not it.
If I was a betting man, it's either Formula E or WEC.
Andretti.
Oh, yes. I forgot about that. I like it. The timeline works too. It gives him 3 years to... Oh, yes. Yes.
And it's also I can be in on the ground and implement my vision from day one. It's Andretti.
You are correct. Yes.
All right, I'll scratch out AlphaTauri and write Andretti.
Okay, we'll take that. I will subscribe to that.
See, this is better. We shouldn't do our crazy predictions ahead of time because, like, you know, we were able to get, to work that out, that he's going to Andretti. You heard it here first.
Oh, that's good. Breaking news.
Man, if we get that one right, like...
Beautiful. Beautiful. Next one. I think this one's just such a slam dunk. I can't see how this isn't possible. I'll be shocked if this isn't true.
Yeah, George posts a shirtless picture on a beach. There is nothing more summer break than George posting a shirtless picture on a beach. That means I will have to go check his Instagram, which I don't do.
Yeah, slam dunk, though. Slam dunk. And the last one here is cycling content.
Yeah, I think Tiffany has signed up for Steamboat Gravel. I would not surprise. It's August 20th, so Valtteri has the week free before he has to go back to do the Dutch Grand Prix. I think we're going to get some Valtteri Bottas, Tiffany Cromwell cycling content.
I thought you said the race in Zandvoort was the 21st.
No, it's the 26, 27, 28, or whatever, 25, 26, 27.
Oh, no, you're right. Okay.
We're going to probably record a podcast like that weekend about...
True. I will say one thing about this prediction, even more so than the George one. I'm pretty sure they post cycling content basically every day. So this really isn't going out there.
All right, fine. Well, do you have anything you think is going to happen over the summer break?
Lewis retires.
Oh, you think Lewis retires? Oh, that's going... I don't know, man.
I think that's happening. I think it's happening, which leads to the whole other conversation, which is very difficult. Who gets his seat?
Alex Albon.
Oh, man, he was on fire today. Man, that car in Monza is going to be comically quick. I think there's a good there's a good chance. It's not a slam dunk, but there's a good chance he's going to get a podium in Monza.
Alex could get it. Mick could get it.
No. Mick is not ready for it.
Oh, but what about Toto's Home for Wayward Drivers?
It is, but he never puts them in a Mercedes. He sends them somewhere else. You've got to be pretty good. If you were a wayward driver, you need to have shown the potential. The only thing that Mick Schumacher has going for him in the contest of getting Lewis's seat when he retires in 2 weeks' time, he's German, and Mercedes would love a German back in that car.
That is true.
That's my only spicy hot take for the break, because the other ones have been destroyed, because they already happened, which was they fired Otmar, and they fired Nick de Vries, and Daniel Ricciardo's back in a car. That's what I had my bets placed on that.
This is the problem with having Spa before the summer break.
Exactly! They got confused, as exactly I predicted would happen.
We nailed that one.
Perfect. Absolutely spot on.
Anything else we need to talk about?
I don't think so.
We'll figure it out for the mid. We'll make sure we have a good stream of consciousness going in our text chat, so we can actually have something to talk about over the summer break.
Yes, I'm still unsure exactly what we're going to talk about, but we will come up with something amazing.
Well, we need to look back at our Bahrain season predictions and see how well they're going. I think they're going terribly.
I like that. And maybe we should do a tot up of all the predictions we've done and see whether throughout the season and see how many have come to fruition.
Oh, I don't want those stats.
Yeah, fair point.
It'll be like looking at like Lance's share of Aston's constructors points. 30% is good enough, right?
Yeah, exactly. 30%, that's not bad.
hey, if you're a baseball player, that's great.
Yeah, baseball, the world's most boring sport.
It's a pastime.
Too much effort. Should we wrap up?
I think so.
Is it your turn or my turn?
It's your turn. I hope that stays in.
So thanks for listening for another week to Tinfoil Helmets. We are waiting for your feedback. Let us know your conspiracies, feedback, and wants to feedback@tinfoilhelmets.com. And remember to tell your friends to listen, like, rate, and subscribe to the world's greatest F1 podcast.
Especially if Otmar is going to Andretti. We're like, we are the best if that happens.
That's going to be amazing.